You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. Today I am joined by Chris Triplett and Chris McFeely. Welcome, gentlemen.
What up?
Hello.
How's it going?
Not bad.
So today, it is Fanboy Versus JMS. Yeah, I know. I know. I feel it, too. So we'll
talk
about
that. He obviously doesn't want my money.
He does. Got money. He's just, you know, we're going to talk about that. So... on the show this week, we've got lots and lots of stuff to talk about, comics, a little bit of news, and at the top of the show, or the bottom of the show, I guess? I don't know. At the end of the show, we are going to be talking about Return of Bruce Wayne 6, which should be interesting. So, McFeely, let's get into the pre-news before we start talking about the JMS stuff. What's going on?
The pre-news.
Pre-news to the big news.
I guess the first thing, this is like pre news because we can't even really say anything about it. Is the fact that we did get a brief look at the Green Lantern movie this week, but it was a trailer for the show, which will be showing the trailer later this week. So I don't think that we could form an opinion on the 5 seconds that we saw, except that it had Kilowog in it.
Yay! Yeah,
which is good.
Yay!
Yeah. Kilowog.
So it's a trailer for a trailer. Okay.
Costume sure is CG.
Low res. Yeah. It's on TV. I don't know. I'm planning to see Harry Potter, so I think that's when the trailer's supposed to premiere, correct?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
So, we'll see. It's Warner Brothers. Yeah, that
would
make sense.
We'll talk more about it whenever the full trailer is out, I guess.
So, yeah, once we see it. You know, and there's always, like, Apple trailers and stuff. So, that'll make sense. Well, excellent. And anything else?
Yeah, other news-wise, again, this is another one that we can't say an awful lot about. We've had two rather surprising little trailers, not trailers, teasers from DC and Marvel. A couple of days back there, end of the week, Marvel released a trailer for February. It's a teaser image for February, so we'll see a bit more in the February previews, hopefully, in a couple of weeks' time. Which is the death of Spider-Man.
No.
And what the hell?
Yeah. Not exactly the best time to kill Spider-Man, having just done a big push to restart his world this week with Big Time, which we'll be talking about later.
Okay, this is what's going to happen. He's going to get shot through time. He's going to wind up in all these different eras, and he's going to come back.
Spider pirate.
Oh, yes.
Spider caveman.
Spider-Man was really Blackbeard.
Didn't they already do that with Deadpool though?
That's true. That would just.
I can't see this being good at all. I mean, I'm hoping that when they're saying like death of Spider-Man, maybe it's like death of like a Spider-Man clone or something.
Or Spider Girl. Spider Girl
here to die, and then it'll turn out to be Kane who got stabbed. Wait, no, they did that.
Kane already died.
They already did that. Yeah.
Maybe we're misreading it. Maybe it's death of Spider Girl. See, Spider Girl just came out in that new book, and it doesn't look like it's going to be very good. So maybe the book's being canceled in February.
I really don't think it matters if it turns out to be good or not. That book is not welcome for this world.
No. Yeah.
Given the fate of Marvel's other new female superhero-led ongoing that just launched this this week, which we'll also talk about later. But then in a sort of fit of anyone you can kill, we can kill better, DC trailed another image, a terribly 90s image of that says it's the bloody S shield from The Death of Superman saying, "Doomsday will reign."
Right.
What the hell?
Well, they've spent the last year making Superman irrelevant, so, you know, I don't know why that would, like, affect anything.
They really want some attention. Well, I mean, my guess would be that they've released this now after the astonishing success of Earth 1. Were we talking about Earth 1 last week at all?
I don't think we mentioned it. I mean, I know the sales were through the roof.
I didn't read it. No, I didn't.
I was going to read it, but I sold out of it before I could get myself one.
So it sold really well? I mean, it's still a Gamebusters or something?
It has sold out everywhere.
This is like a hardcover, right? So it's kind of expensive, huh?
Well, okay, but let's be clear about that. And this, I think, will probably end up leading into our discussion of JMS. But financial success does not necessarily imply critical success, correct?
No, it seems to have enjoyed its success because nobody got blown up or died or no oil got spilled anywhere last week. And so a lot of American newspapers needed to fill their page count and talked about the launch of this book. Literally, without sarcasm, a lot of newspapers covered the launch of this thing. And consequently, it has literally sold out. It's going to be about another month before it's going to be available again until they get another print run done.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, though, but doesn't DC, like, shit Superman reboots for breakfast, like, every day?
This seems particularly irrelevant in the face of just, like, Geoff Johns' Secret Origin completing last month, I think?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, I mean, but this has Straczynski's name attached to it. But this is all terribly secondary to the fact that I haven't read a good review of it.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, going back. I mean, just because it's sold doesn't mean it's actually good.
Yeah, I mean, I have not heard anything good about it.
No, and in fact, I've heard parallels to, like, Twilight and emo nonsense attached to this.
Oh, God.
I mean, I've heard one or two good things. But
So the new Lex Luthor is like a vampire, or is he a werewolf?
Does he walk around without a shirt on? I guess we don't know because we haven't read it. So you know,
yeah we haven't read. I don't think I will be reading it anytime soon. I'm going to read the Gary Frank Geoff Johns Batman one next year.
Yeah, I was interested in maybe reading this, but the whole idea that it's a hardcover and it's not like in a easily affordable, you know, price to pay for like a first issue kind of put me off from it.
It's a full graphic novel.
Is it like 20 or 25 or I don't know.
$20, I think.
$20? Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to pay that much for it.
Fair enough. Well, all accounts seem to suggest you're probably right, too. But that is second-hand information. Fanboy Versus does not share the opinions of those reviews we have solicited.
We do not accept other people's reviews, only our own. Okay, so, but the other news that came out of this, though, I'll let you tell us, McFeely. Tell us what's going on with JMS.
Well, the great success of Earth One has, basically DC really seems to want a sequel pronto to capitalize on the success of this. And so JMS is ditching monthly comics to write the sequel. He's going to focus on graphic novels and minis from now on.
Bullshit.
Now, what the hell?
I call bullshit.
I call bullshit. But this comes, and make no mistake, like, this is imminent. This is like as of now. He's dropping off Wonder Woman and Superman, and he's not even finishing up his stories on them.
Mm-mm.
The writers who are going to come on afterwards are going to finish up his stories based on his notes.
Which to me means, like, 1 to 2 issues just to, like, take the characters back where they're supposed to be.
Okay, so he doesn't care enough about these reboots to finish him himself, and I need to care enough that someone else is going
to
finish him for him?
Yeah, it's a reboot.
No, I call double bullshit. So here's the deal. I believe JMS as far as the, you know, wanting to not focus on writing monthlies. Why? Because he sucks at it. Because he has completely destroyed just about every monthly series that he's put his hands on.
Thor was good.
I know that the Thor run was decent, but he destroyed Spider-Man. That has taken years to fix.
He didn't destroy Spider-Man. He sort of brought Spider-Man back, and then he destroyed it.
Yeah, Yeah, I have trouble outright decrying his Spider-Man. It
I mean, half of his Spider-Man run is actually good. It's that second half you want to avoid.
His Spidey was a success.
But just from what's happened at the beginning of this Wonder Man, Superman, I think it's mutually beneficial. I think
yeah, it will save these books, certainly.
Yeah, I think for DC's side, I think it's going to save Wonder Woman and Superman. I think it's going to allow them to get, hopefully, those books back on track, because I don't think the numbers were very good on those series, correct?
I don't know.
Selling like gangbusters.
I think like the first issue sold really well, didn't they? I want to say that that first issue of Wonder Woman, like I couldn't even find a copy. I had to get a reorder on it.
But the press around that was really big too, though. Just like it was for year one.
Oh my God! Wonder Woman's costume changed. Ah!
Yeah. Which is going to go right back, because the series comes out, you know what, next year. So, but
there's
the other...
one plus point that I can see, which is that he said he wants to focus on graphic novels and miniseries. And he has, in an interview, I think it was with Rich Johnson, I don't know who it was, he said he's going to finish the 12 for Marvel.
Oh, he didn't finish it?
No, he never finished the 12. Mm-hmm. He left the 12 after, I think, issue 9 was the next issue due out. And that's about 2 years ago.
Well, you know, and my thing is, it's great. Put him on, like, the graphic novel stuff, let him write Elseworlds stuff, and then that way he doesn't affect, like, the primary DC universe. And if he's having trouble doing the monthlies, which apparently he is, then
The last issue of Superman was a fell-in issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't even
write, like, get stuff. Fuck you, Joe. Seriously.
I mean, I was on the fence.
What else
are
you
doing? I was on the fence. I was ready to drop Wonder Woman, and now I think he's made the mind up for me.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I say it. It's like, in one sense, like, the reaction is sort of, in a sense, angry or mad, you know, because it's like, dude, you just ruined these two series, and now you're, you're leaving? Yeah. But in another sense, I'm kind of like, wait a minute, why am I complaining? This is a good thing.
Yeah. That is absolutely it. It's like, I'm really annoyed by his lack of dedication, but at the same time, it's like, thank fuck, the books might get better now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm
very torn by it. I'm annoyed on an integrity level, but I'm relieved on a creative level.
Well, and it's something that may not come out for a few years, you know, depending on what the working relationship...
Oh, they'll have that banged out before the middle of next year. You watch.
Well, I'm just saying it's like, as far as the backstory, like, because I think the question for me, just from an internal sort of gossipy standpoint, is... Was this JMS's decision or was this DC's decision? Was DC stepping in and saying, look, we don't want to lose you, but you're crapping up our comics. Why don't you write these graphic novels? Or was it JMS stepping in and saying...
That, I mean, they've been working on the Earth One things for a while now. I think it was DC saying, we want a sequel, and JMS saying, well, I can't do that and this. Take your pick. And,
yeah.
You know, this is where we've wound up.
That's fine.
Yeah, I remember this being announced a long time ago. I mean, this has been
years
been back, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's a year.
Is it maybe like a year, maybe, or something? I can't remember. It's been a while.
What? Yeah.
Hmm.
Maybe the new year.
Yeah.
I think it was in the new year it was introduced, announced.
Oh, well. I think, you know, like I said, upset that he's not finishing it, but kind of glad that someone else is hopefully going to fix it. But then it'll just remain as to who they actually put on those full time, since I'm assuming the writers.
I'm
going
to be very curious to see how long they do it. I mean, I wonder
right
if
now they're
if
they're saying what Phil Hester and Chris Robertson will be jumping in is what I'm reading. Is that right?
Know who either of those guys are?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. It's like I'm assuming
I know Phil Hester's name, but I couldn't tell you what he was on.
I'm assuming these
Phil
are guys
Hester's
that had. Nothing
clear.
Better to do, and so, like, here, fix it.
Yeah. I wonder, will they make it go on for as long as Straczynski was intending, or will they wrap it up quicker and just get on with something else?
If I had to guess, they'll wrap it up. Who's going to want to try to write off of JMS's notes for the next six months?
I bet two issues is what they'll dedicate to both books.
Yeah, just enough to kind of wrap it.
The thing I will say is that Kieran Gillen did a fantastic job on Thor following up JMS, but he wasn't following any threads that JMS had left. He was just bringing Thor into where he needed to be for Siege, but he did a great job on Thor.
So okay, and that's it for news, I assume.
So Kieran Gillen's Siege Aftermath storyline for Thor, the trade paperback with Thor in Hell and the Disir and all of that stuff, that came out last week, so everybody should buy it.
Ooh,
JD.
Yeah, I think I need to buy that. We know how much I love Asgardian stuff. So, okay.
There we go. That's the news.
That's the news.
JMS.
Awesome.
Do we want to talk about the Christopher Nolan interviewing like all the big ladies of Hollywood for parts in Dark Knight Rises?
Don't care. Okay.
I think we pretty much
just talked about it. I hadn't actually heard that. So
I mean, it pretty much says that Catwoman's going to be in it.
Probably.
It might be Poison Ivy.
Or it might be Poison Ivy.
I don't see Poison Ivy fitting in that universe very well, but I don't know. Who knows? Oh. I think she's a little too metahuman to, you know, be effective.
You might
be
looking for a Batgirl.
So, yeah, that's true too, you know.
Oh, he's probably looking for a Catwoman.
Yeah, that's what Catwoman, if I had to guess. But, we'll see.
All right.
Okay. Triplet, go. Yeah.
On what, comics?
Yes, preferably.
Yeah. Oh, shoot, what am I talking about? What did you guys read?
What do you want to talk about? Talk what you want to talk about.
Just talk what you want to. You never read the same stuff we do, so you go ahead.
Yeah, well, I did this time, didn't I? I read Amazing Spider-Man, I read New Avengers.
Take a New Avengers.
Return of Bruce Wayne 6 and Thor.
Take Thor.
So we'll save Bruce for the end, so do any of those. Anything you want, or even all three.
Yeah, do all three. Yeah. Do all three of those.
Let's jump into Amazing Spider-Man.
Ooh, okay.
So, tell me, did you guys check out that book?
I did, sir.
I looked through it. I didn't.
You looked through it.
I didn't have room. I had a dozen books this week. Okay.
I didn't have time
to read it properly, even as a retailer.
You didn't even have to read the previous issues. This is you're jumping on big time.
Tell me about it now. I want to know about it.
So, I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. Okay, so JD, you've probably not been keeping up with a lot of Amazing Spider-Man. So,
this is
like your jumping on point for the most part. So, what did you think about it?
You know, I'm torn. I mean, my thing was that for the fact that Dan Slott has been an integral part of Spider-Man, it felt like cleaning house and starting the new era. And it's not that the things that happened were bad, but it was just sort of like, here's your new Spider-Man, here's his new life, here's the scary people that are going to be after him. You know, it just, I don't know. The initial storyline, the Avengers storyline that starts the issue off, I mean, that was fine, you know. And I like the idea of Johnny trying to explain to, you know, Spider-Man that he's techie enough to help out, but it does sort of, you know, Peter's always been techie based, but I'm not familiar with this Peter Parker that Dan Slott's putting forward. This genius level.
You mean like
level.
Him being a genius and whatnot?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you know, he invented his web shooters. I mean, that was like in
but
the first issue.
That's technology. That's inventiveness. And that's not genius level ingenuity.
And this isn't something that Dan Slott invented. I mean, he's like had several writers that have portrayed him where he's just basically a, you know, not like a Tony Stark or a Reed Richards. But he's definitely, you know, better than, you know, smarter than a normal person.
Sure,
obviously.
Sure, he is. But how well has that ever gone? You know, how often does that end up actually working out for Peter?
Well, it never does. I mean, he
exactly.
always and it's that we can pretty much guess that that's how it's going to go this time also. That,
so
you know,
why
Spider-Man's going to get involved? You know, ruining, you know, his new life, basically, his new job, because that's pretty much how it always goes.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's where I'm a little bit disappointed. It's like, I want to see, I don't know, anew or something different. But it's just like, it feels like we're going back to this square one that Spider-Man always ends up at. You start off the series and you hand him the world, and then you spend the rest of the run taking it away from him.
Well, I mean, it makes sense that they did this, because for a very long time, Spidey's been the guy that, you know, he can't keep a job. I mean, there's been this running storyline where he was trying to help Jameson, who's now the mayor, because he had gotten into some big trouble. And he basically doctored a photograph to basically make it look like Jameson didn't do something. I can't remember exactly what it was. It's something to do with the vulture.
They mentioned it. Sure. They mentioned it in this.
And
in
it's this basically blacklisted him. I mean, he basically has – there's like no one's going to hire him unless, you know, they actually, you know, kind of feel sorry for him. And, you know, that's, you know, where, Jameson's wife, you know, pretty much gets involved and says that, hey, you know, this guy's a genius. Why can't he get a job? You know, looking at the stuff that he's done, you know, throughout his life. And it kind of makes sense. This is like the point where, okay, you know, the book is kind of starting. This is your jumping on point. And so, you know, be done with this, you know, Spidey can't, you know, pay his rent and everything. We do need something different. And this is for basically the last year or so, this is something different.
Yeah, but it's not different overall. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, go back to the beginning of the JMS run. What happened? Peter became a science teacher. How well did that work out? It didn't.
Yeah, you know, but that's been years and years ago.
But I'm saying,
that's like a generation ago for some comic readers. I mean, those people that were reading those stories, they're probably not even still reading them. And now there's probably new readers that have never even experienced this type of a story before, where he's getting that shot and he's getting that job.
I remember that the last big scenario shuffle before that, the beginning of the John Byrne Howard Mackey reboot to number one, started with him getting a job at a science company as well.
Yeah, yeah. See what I'm saying? It's like, that's what I'm talking about. I don't know.
I mean, Peter, they could put him back in the Daily Bugle, but I think that they're sort of leading him away from that direction for now, because you know, a photographer, you know, for a newspaper, you know, I mean, yeah, that's not now-ish, I guess. You know what I mean, I get that. That's why they're doing it. But also, putting him into this new job, this high-profile job, sort of puts him in a situation for new villains. You know what I mean? I mean, because it's this big techie job.
To have new villains, though.
No, Spider-Man has great villains. And
yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that he has to have new villains, but it could be kind of like, you know, going back to the Gauntlet. You know, it could be a situation in which you can revitalize old villains.
Well, Slott certainly jammed enough villains into the. I mean, there's a lot of content in this issue.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty big issue. I mean, it was a long issue. Yeah.
Who is this metallic guy? I'm not familiar with.
I don't know who that guy is. I kept thinking they were going to explain it at the end, but I don't know. I've not seen him before.
Okay. Oh, snap. I didn't know who he was, but if I had the front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he showed up somewhere, but, you know, I can't remember him.
What's he doing?
He's just kind of watching.
He's just kind of watching from the distance. I don't even know who he's following. Is he? He's not following.
Yeah, he's kind of
Peter
following.
Parker, is he?
I thought he was, but
I think he's following somebody else, maybe. But he notices that Peter Parker looks his way, and thinking, you know, how
he's... Jameson. He's following Jameson because he's
Jameson.
Saying,
"Well, there you go, central mystery out of the gate."
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I have faith it's not to do this sort of stuff. I'm going to see what my list is like next week, and if I have some room on there, I'm probably going to pick this up.
I mean, I think it's a good book. I think it's a very good starting point. It's people that have been interested in how Amazing Spider-Man's been, because, you know, we've been talking about it, and then other people have just been talking about it, and I think this is like the spot where you can
just
going to
get
see.
People talking. I mean, there has been a lot of attention put on this. Mm-hmm. So I really hope it does well for the book too, because I really want Slott to succeed with a mainstream ongoing. You know, the initiative, he was only on it for about a year, and it's never had super high sales, but it persists as Avengers: The Academy, and I've said it before. His Mighty Avengers just wasn't great, sadly. I love Dan Slott, but his Mighty Avengers did not do it for me. Yeah. And he's worked hard on the brand. You know, Amazing Spider-Man has got good press, but that is just him as part of a brand trust. So I'm really looking forward and hoping, you know, really hoping that he can do, you know, we can go back to She-Hulk levels of quality on Amazing Spider-Man.
And I just like that how, okay, you've got this situation where the Avengers are, I mean, basically the Avengers are trying to stop Dr. Octopus. He's back again, and you know, he literally just saw him like two issues back in a big storyline, and he's already threatening New York again. And they make a little joke about it. Yeah, I know. I mean, they make a little joke about it. It's like, you know, it's like, don't I just fight him like every day of the week? And I think like, I think Doc Ock says something like, you know, with what little time I have left, I ain't got time to wait. I got to keep on attacking New York or something, you know?
Yeah.
But,
well,
I mean,
anything that does more Doc Ock is good in my book. I think I said it whenever he popped up recently. He's just been, this dude was Spider-Man's arch enemy in the years between the Green Goblin being dead and coming back, and he seems criminally underplayed. He has been criminally underplayed in the last 5, 6, 7 years or so. So I want Doc Ock back up there on the front lines again, and I think Slott wants him there too. I mean, he did the 600th issue that brought him back. So,
and it was a great place, I think, to kind of bring him back and to do what they did with him.
I think that's other problem, though, with this, is that it really, in terms of people in Spider-Man's life, it just, I mean, it's everybody in the kitchen sink. I mean, who isn't in this issue?
I don't object to that at all. I
know,
Gwen
Stacy, because she's dead.
Well, there you go. Isn't she mentioned,
though?
You gotta have his cast in this issue. This is the issue where you get the new reader, you get the person, and you got to kind of reintroduce his cast. So it makes sense why everybody's in this issue.
Okay.
I mean, if we were about 5 years ago, this would be Spider-Man number one again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This would have been about number one issue, but that doesn't work anymore as a sales tactic. So whatever. But,
I'm so
you know,
glad
that, this is. This is like, guys, start here. Here is everything you will ever need to know. You can read this now. And you absolutely can.
Yeah.
You do get everything. You don't have to worry about anything else.
But the thing I really liked about the book was that basically there was the situation where the Avengers are defusing the bomb. You know, Doc Ock, he basically attacks New York just as a distraction because he's trying to get something else is what he's trying to get. And so there's a situation with a bomb, and the Avengers are trying to disarm it. And they've got all these, you know, these high-tech ways to disarm it and stop it. And Doc Ock his villains basically say, well, you know, what are you doing? You can't blow up New York. You know, my family members are there. You know, what are you doing? And he says, oh, New York's going to be fine because last time I underestimated Spider-Man. Now I know for a fact that he's a genius, and he'll find a way to solve it. And then he pretty much does, and he solves it by daylight savings time.
Yeah,
I thought that was awesome. of all the things, like, you know, Tony Stark and Reed Richards are talking about all these things they could do to kind of, you know, save the Earth or something, you know. And then he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'll just, you know, reset the clock. We got an extra hour.
Yeah. Right.
That is cool.
But before we leave it, I think we should talk about one thing. Oh, that was an awesome page. I love that. That was great.
Yeah. I saw that one as well, yeah.
Yeah, he's like Spidey's basically Michelle is leaving New York, which was his roommate. And it's because she's done the whole reason that she was introduced is cuz she was Vin's sister and she's a lawyer and she was basically trying to get him out of jail. And now that he's, you know, been paroled, she's pretty much done. So she's leaving and Spidey's left, you know, without a place to live. So a large part of the issue, he's basically trying to find somewhere that he can stay, and he's basically going to his entire cast of characters looking for a roommate. And you get just lots of interesting little things, like, you know, like you find out that Flash and Betty are back together again. Oh my God! Yeah, and then you go and a little scene with MJ, and he's like, you know, can I stay? And they just start, you know, laughing at each other, and she's like, "Hi, honey, I'm home." And he's like, "How was your day? Oh, I needed that. Yeah, I should be going later." You know? that's just awesome. That's the kind of stuff that just makes this book great. But the one thing I wanted to talk about, which is well, I don't think it's a big spoiler because I think in the big time trailer, everybody saw this character.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the last page, Hobgoblin's back.
Yay!
Hobgoblin in a Dan Slott comic is back. Yay. Oh my God.
You know, I did some thinking about this when somebody asked me about it last week or the week before, and I think the Hobgoblin's been out of action since like 1999.
Oh, well, he actually was he was in Spider-Girl.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Yeah, really. Well,
yeah, but I mean he was in it, and I know he wasn't like in like a regular Spider-Man comic, but it was kind of neat that he was actually being used. And it
I just mean like in mainstream timeline.
Yeah.
Like Roderick Kingsley buggered off to the Caribbean or wherever it was he took himself, and he hasn't been seen since.
Yeah, but I think
that was like 1999, 2000, I think.
Was it that miniseries or something? Is that when?
Well, there was Hobgoblin Lives, where that was I think that was like 97, 98. I'm not sure if that was before the Clone Saga was over or not.
Yeah, because I remember the miniseries where they sort of brought him back and they did his origins or something. They changed like who really was Hobgoblin back in the day.
Well, like back in the day, like Roger Stern always intended for Roderick Kingsley to be the Hobgoblin, but he left Spider-Man before he got to do his reveal, and he never told anybody who it was. Yeah. So they looked at all the clues and they figured it must be Ned Leeds, but Ned Leeds had just died, so they had to reveal that Ned Leeds was the Hobgoblin in a flashback.
Yeah,
and then Stern came on in the 97, 98, whenever it was, did the Hobgoblin Lives miniseries to bring Kingsley back and reveal Kingsley had always been the Hobgoblin. And there was a short story about him and Norman Osborn duking it out. I think it was in Spectacular Spider-Man. And he hasn't been seen since.
Yeah. But I think that's a great ending to this issue, and I think that there's so much potential there that I can't wait for the next issue, honestly. It's...
And real quick, before we leave this and move on, hey, the Spider-Girl mini-ish issue is
whoop-de-dum-de-dum
at the end of this. I have to say...
Like short story, I guess, a precursor to the first issue, is that what it is?
Here's what's wacky and stupid about this. She tweets.
Yeah, and that's her real Twitter account, too.
Yes.
Now,
here's what's telling about this. Because
that
time...
first tweet that she says in the issue, she says, "So I totally helped Spider-Man today." I think that literally is the first tweet of that Twitter account. It's the_spider_girl.
Yes. Now, here's the really telling part. It has 628 followers. So, how many issues do you think a big time went out this week? Okay. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Now, I think that that Twitter account was maybe on Marvel's website, like even prior to big time. I think like that Twitter account's been out there for a while.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think so. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but
nobody likes you, Aranya.
Yeah. I mean, to be positive though, the art and the story looked pretty good. I like the look of the art.
Yeah.
I don't hate that costume design.
No, I quite like.
Maybe if they want to go this route, maybe they should have just made a whole new character. You know.
Why? Why not take one character that nobody cares about and merge it with another character that nobody cares about? I mean, that makes sense.
Merge it with a character who has a small but dedicated fan base. Yeah.
I mean, it's not my Spider-Girl, so I don't give a crap about it.
Thereby alienating both. You know, both.
Which Marvel
because
is
because it is Spider-Girl,
at.
I have like a tiny degree of care for it, but that tiny degree does not make me want to go out and buy the book.
This is not going to sell, but you'll have to pardon my cynicism. over whether or not we'll see if Marvel cancels it just as quickly as it's canceled Black Widow and Sword and Hawkeye and Mockingbird and She-Hulk and all these other books that have been canceled. You know, Black Panther, ooh, that sounds pretty shit, but it sure trundles along. Wonder why that is.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we'll just see.
All right, what else you got, Triple?
Let's see. Also got New Avengers, number 6. Did any of you guys get to read that?
Nope. Yes.
Okay, well, what'd you think about it?
I enjoyed it, as I enjoy New Avengers regularly.
It was good. I mean,
yeah.
Has there been a bad issue of New Avengers yet, of this series?
True, yeah. There hasn't. It's just, I mean, it's not earth-shattering. I don't know that there's much I can say about it. There's never much we can seem to say about New Avengers, but it continues to be entertaining.
Yeah.
Because and I believe it will continue to be entertaining as long as Brian Bendis finds himself entertained by writing it.
And as long as Stuart Immonen does the art, because the art's awesome.
Oh, yeah. You know, if someone else was drawing this, it wouldn't be nearly as good as it is.
No. But it's, I mean, it was good. I mean, there's not, it's like one of those issues. I mean, it's definitely a Bendis issue because, like, I read it in, like, very short amount of time. It was, like 5 minutes or something. It's, like, really quick. But, I mean, it's basically just a fight is what it is. It's, you know,
they've gone a little heavy on those little spell descriptors.
Yeah. Now, is that something that they just started with this series, or is that something going back to, like, the old New Avengers? Like, whenever, is it Dr. Voodoo? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't remember seeing them before this series. I read something somewhere that suggested that something like this happened with the Immortal Iron Fist, but I don't know because I didn't read that series.
Yeah, I didn't either. But,
I don't know.
But
the cover
of
this issue screams, one of these Avengers will die.
Yeah, I wonder which one.
Yeah, the Avengers on the cover, folks, are Luke Cage, Ms. Marvel, Doctor Strange, Wolverine, Brother Voodoo, I'm sorry, Dr. Voodoo, and Mockingbird. I had a customer buy this issue this week, and they said to me, they said, yeah, it sucks that Mockingbird's gonna die. No, I had read this by this point and said nothing, but I said, oh, you think it's going to be Mockingbird, do you? And he says, well, who else could it be? Hawkeye just left the series. What reason does she have to hang around? And that's not an illogical viewpoint. Though I was prompted to remind him that at the time this cover was drawn, Hawkeye and Mockingbird was still an ongoing monthly series.
Oh, so that was an ongoing monthly. I thought that was a miniseries.
No, Hawkeye and Mockingbird was another ongoing, along with Black Widow.
Oh, God.
Yeah, which was going to have a crossover with Black Widow for 2 issues out of each of the series. But now the 2 ongoings are over, and the crossover is being published as a miniseries called Widowmaker, which you'll have noticed ads for in this week's comics. Oh, they say the 2 comics will be back after the crossover's over. And I have no doubt that they mean that when they say that.
Mm.
But then I also have no doubt that they meant that when they said it about Iron Fist and Ghost Rider coming back after their comics were canceled to make way for miniseries.
So was there ever a chance when this issue came out, or before this issue came out, that it was going to be Doctor Strange that dies?
Where the hell is my Doctor Strange ongoing?
I mean, because they're not doing anything else with him. As far as I know, this is the only place that he's being used, and...
You're giving everybody at Namor has an ongoing at the moment. Where is my Doctor Strange? I mean, I've never been a huge fan of Doctor Strange, but he's been off the board long enough, and I've seen enough of him in New Avengers, and I've read the last 2 Doctor Strange minis that I read were Mark Waid's Strange was good, and Brian K. Vaughan's The Oath was excellent.
Yeah, that was
good.
And I
want Doctor Strange. So give me, cancel it after 5 issues if you have to.
You know, if they released a book now and it was an ongoing book now, this is the time when they could get me.
Yeah,
I would pick it up right now. And you know what would even convince me to pick it up after looking at this issue? Stuart Immonen and doing the art.
But see, Marvel
wouldn't he do a fantastic Doctor Strange book?
Yeah, but remember, Marvel's not doing ongoings anymore. Everything is like a 24-month mini. So.
Oh God, yeah, that's right. Because it's. Because it's got to be $2.99, so it's got to be season one of Doctor Strange.
Right. So it's going to be a 12-month mini at $3.99.
Yeah, so...
I was saying, you know, this issue is just a big fight with... what's his name? How you say that?
Agamotto.
Agamotto, I think, is the usual.
And, we're doing spoilers. This isn't like a Darth Vader-esque spoiler, is it, on who dies? So,
I don't know. I mean, it's pretty obvious from the list off who I just read off. I don't think that anybody's,
So it's, Dr. Voodoo.
Oh, no. How will the world go on?
Oh, no.
He saves the world.
And
good for him.
And now there's no Sorcerer Supreme.
Oh,
but
my.
Wait, there's Doctor Strange.
Mm.
What's he going to do?
What's going to happen? Man, we didn't see this coming like a freaking year ago.
Yeah, that really didn't work well for them, did it?
And now, like, his brother, they've set him up like he's going to get revenge, like he's going to be a big villain or something now.
That would be interesting.
He possesses Luke Cage, and he basically says, I'm going to kill you guys, and I'm going to destroy the Avengers because you caused my brother to die.
How many times has Luke Cage been possessed in the process of this series?
Twice.
Every issue? I don't know.
Everybody's possessed at some point in time or another, really.
Yeah. Well,
fair enough.
Yeah, but it's a fun issue.
Yeah, it was a good issue. I liked it, and yeah, nothing wrong with it. It like I said, it just kind of goes by pretty quick. Get a little scene at the end where Hellstrom comes out and basically says, yeah, the Avengers are awesome and they're badass, but they're not going to come out here and tell you that, but y'all should know it anyway. And then he just walks
And then next issue, we have the Who Stays and Who Goes issue. Because apparently they're wising up to the fact that Spider-Man and Wolverine are on two teams.
Yeah. I wondered when that was going to happen.
Just keep them on both books.
They're on two separate coasts.
I mean, Wolverine's like
I thought that...
They're both in New York.
Oh, okay. Well,
this is not
the point
West
of
Coast
that? I thought the whole idea was that they were on the other side of the...
Live in Avengers Mansion.
That's right. Apparently, I don't read this.
And Avengers is what in Tony's tower thing, right? The Stark Tower?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe New York is like the hotbed of like all the crap that's going to infest this world.
Of course
I'm telling you.
Two Avengers teams.
Been that way for 40 years.
If I was a villain in the Marvel Universe, I would so attack Los Angeles.
If anything, Secret Avengers is West Coast Avengers.
Yeah, they're like...
Because they're everywhere. Because they're like the Black Ops Avengers. You know?
Well, I remember in Dan Slott's Great Lakes Avengers Misassembled miniseries. did either of you guys read that?
I think I read... I've read about
the
it.
First issue of it. I don't think I read the whole thing.
So it's like the villain is Maelstrom, the inhuman deviant half-breed. And he's out to utterly destroy reality with this machine he's created. And he builds it, and he starts destroying reality quite successfully. And then, he just lifts his head up, and I believe the line went, it's true what they say. If you want to destroy the world, start in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Man.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that? I need more Flatman.
Great Lakes Avengers? They're still running around.
I need more Squirrel Girl and Flatman.
Who's the guy that dies? He dies.
Mr. Immortal.
Yeah, Mr. Immortal. Yeah, that's right.
Him and Deadpool are like this.
But if you need more Squirrel Girl, then you'll want to start reading New Avengers.
That's right.
Squirrel Girl is Jessica Jones and Luke Cage's nanny as of like next issue or the issue after.
That's right. God. They are doing that. I forgot about that.
That's what it says. The nanny cometh on the next page. Oh my
yes.
God.
Yeah,
and Squirrel Girl is one of the most powerful people in the Marvel Universe. So,
yeah. Dan Slott brought her back to New York in one of those one-pagers in the Age of Heroes anthology. Because she decided to leave the Great Lakes Avengers because she was just taking up all the spotlight and she needed to give them room to be the heroes she knew they were. So she's come back to New York.
Oh my God, that's awesome!
Yeah. So yeah, the book's going to be getting even better. That's fantastic.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so that's
answer to Lady Rex's question in the forum. He is called Mr. Immortal because he dies and then comes back.
And they never show it. It's like he dies in the most horrific ways, and then like off panel, he just reappears.
Yeah, he's
they don't even explain it.
Sweet.
It's great. He's been what? Well, I think Deadpool alone has probably killed him over 100 times.
Quite a few times. Yeah, seriously, if you want to read some good Great Lakes stuff, like, just go and find the trade for Great Lakes Avengers Misassembled by Dan Slott when he was still in his lesser-known cult status She-Hulk phase. And it's basically a big rip on Identity Crisis and Avengers Disassembled. It just really rips the arse out of like big name events that casually treat characters and kill them, and it's very good stuff. The comedy's a lot blacker than you're used to from Dan Slott than we were at the time. Anyway,
I need to find that.
Definitely recommend.
Is that in a trade?
Yes, it should be. I think the trade's still in print.
Okay, I need to look for that. I'll try to find that.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, I had Thor number 617, so we can talk about Thor.
Thor.
So, did you guys read Thor?
No,
I read Thor.
Thor was pretty good. I liked it. I don't think there's like anything like, you know, mind-blowingly awesome that happened in the issue, but it's been pretty much like every issue's kind of been that way. It's been
following a pretty tight pattern.
Yeah.
But this one is still better than the last issue, because the last issue was a lot of repetition of the first issue.
Yeah. And we got the whole deal. We did get the cliffhanger with, you know, Thor misses Loki, misses his brother, and even though he knows he's this bad guy, he's still his brother, and he wants him back, so he wills him back. And in this issue, he, it looks like he got him back, but not in the way I guess he thought he was going to get it back.
Seems like this way could be better for everybody.
So he finds him in France, in Paris, and he's a little boy. He's basically one of those guys on the streets that tries to trick you into playing a card game and takes your money. So that's basically Loki. He tricks you to play a card game and takes your money, you know, or, you know, your soul, or, you know, your city or something, you know, if it's real Loki. Yeah.
The trickster.
But like when Thor shows up, I mean, Thor looks like Ultimate Thor to me.
Yeah, I thought that
too.
Yeah.
I had to do a double take, and I thought, am I reading an Ultimate? Because, you know, there's the Ultimate Thor comic that's out, you know, that has been coming out. And for a minute, I thought, did I pick up the wrong issue? You know, I thought, maybe there's like a kid Loki and Ultimate Thor. Maybe that's going on in the story. And you know what? I mean, that's kind of weird. But. You also get the continuation of the thing with the doctor that's trying to explain to everybody that, you know, bad stuff's going down because, you know, Asgard's on Earth and nobody wants to listen to him. And this issue, he gets Tony Stark to sort of listen to him.
That's,
you know,
good.
The dude, yeah. But I don't know. What did you think? Like, anything stand out in the book? The art still looks really awesome.
The art is really the prevailing high point. You know, I really enjoyed this sequence with the the trolls or the elves, or I've forgotten what they are.
Dwarves.
The dwarven seers, who are the last living beings in the realm of the dwarves in Nidavellir, or however you pronounce that. And they've seen the coming of these world eaters, and they willfully step out into the light and allow themselves to be turned to stone to spare themselves the destruction that will be brought by these guys is coming.
So, are we going to get like every issue? There's going to be another sort of mystical kind of race or something that these dudes are going to destroy, and it's just going to keep building up until, I guess, they have their supposed showdown with the Asgardians. I guess is where they're going with it. You know,
well, I don't know. The next issue, based on the next issue page, I think we'll be getting a bit of a shift around and things. For the next issue page, promises Odin.
Yeah, that was cool.
That means that the World Eaters are going to be breaking into wherever the dead lie. Into that world that Odin has made for himself in death.
So are we going to get Odin? Are we going to get Odin back, you think?
I think so. Odin will come back to super-duper Odin hoodoo to fix Asgard and put it back where it needs to be.
Because, like, Thor doesn't want Odin back, right? I mean, because he doesn't
want him back. Doesn't want him back. He feels pretty guilty. I mean, he had a long talk with him whenever he managed to make it through to that dimension, and he talked with him, and he felt pretty guilty about it. You know, he wanted to try and bring him back, but he hadn't at the same time, because it would have meant renouncing his power, because at the time he was still king of Asgard, you know, and Odin told him that he shouldn't worry about it because many's a king was made by, you know, betraying their father. It wasn't anything to be ashamed of. I think we can probably just expect Odin to basically save everybody's bacon.
Well, yeah, I mean, I always assumed he was going to come back anyway. I just didn't know when it was going to be. Because, I mean, you can't keep Odin dead forever, you know. Eventually he's got to come back.
And we're moving back into this movie universe, too, right? I mean, it's not the movie universe, but, I mean, the movie's coming up, don't they? I mean, isn't there a bit of a push to get it sort of more in line with what's going to be in the film?
I would imagine. But, I mean, I'm fully not bothered about it. Odin has been dead since about two-thirds of the way through Dan Jurgens' run. Odin has
it's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a long time since Odin died. I can accept the resurrection at this stage. Because he's one of the gods. That's how this goes for them.
You mean not like when they killed Bullseye and then resurrected him like three issues later?
Is he alive again?
I think so. I don't know. I'm assuming that's what they did in Deadlands. Or Shadowlands or whatever. Should be Deadlands.
I don't know.
And so, like, at the end of this issue, I guess those are the dwarves again, aren't they? They're invading Earth.
That's where the dwarves went. I think they're looking for sanctuary in Asgard.
Yeah, they're running from, I guess, the whatever those guys are, the red demon-y looking dudes. They say, brothers to Asgard, run to Asgard for your lives. That's what the dude says at the end. Yep. And that's Thor. Yep. I mean, it's a good book, but like I said, you know, it's just not much going on. Loki's back.
Yeah, more than last issue, though.
Yeah. I think it's just building. It's just building to something, mm-hmm. and then like the next issue, maybe where it's building to, and then it's going to be like, wow, that's awesome, and look at all that's going on in this issue, you know?
The arc remains a high point.
Yeah. I love it that wherever those dudes go, the you know, the primary bad guys that they're establishing in the book, it rains blood.
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of awesome.
It's a real... The worlds and the color palettes that are getting used for the different worlds are really... there's just some really great work from every creative level of this thing.
Yeah. But good book. I enjoyed it and can't wait for the next one. I'm so happy to actually be getting Thor again and to have a Thor book that I'm pretty proud of, you know? Because, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, JMS's Thor wasn't a book that I was proud of. But, I mean, it's just been so long since I've had a Thor book to read and just be like, you know, look at this. This is cool. You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's Thor. And that's it for me, except for Return of Bruce Wayne.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
McFeely, mm-hmm. Go.
Okay, I'm going to try and keep this brief, but I got to kick it off with a quick touch on Tiny Titans. Tiny Titans, Little Archie, issue 2 is out this week, and Josie and the Pussycats join the fun.
Awesome.
And they get invited to the Tiny Titans Pet Club, because they're pussycats, obviously. But, of course, the first rule of Pet Club is that you don't talk about Pet Club. So they can't tell Archie where it is. They just let him follow him. That's some ferocious typing you're doing there.
Oh, sorry about that.
And Moose and his pet Moose come and join Pet Club as well. And Melody of the Pussycats meets Tara and her pet Rock as well. And they also bust out the Archie superheroes, Archie's Pure Heart, the powerful superhero identity, and the other characters for a bit of fun. And I'm not familiar with this Mad Doctor Doom character who has appeared in this issue, but I'm guessing he must be somebody from the Pure Heart, the powerful Archie stories. He doesn't take well to meeting Trigon on the street. Yeah, okay. It's rather good stuff overall, and they do a little epilogue where they follow up that thing with Mr. Weatherby and Slade knowing each other, and they also dance the Bat-Tussie.
Fantastic.
Always. Can't let an issue of Tiny Titans pass without a little nod. But
so that's not like a regular issue, you said that's like a crossover.
That's yeah, that's issue. The crossover, the second issue of the 3-issue crossover miniseries.
Okay.
Oh, I see that Lady Rex says she's got some Tiny Titans on order as well. I am happy to hear that.
I can't see that anymore.
Oh, you lay. So let's talk then about Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Which yeah, is, it's going to be my last Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Now, Gail Simone's still writing it, right?
She oh, is yeah. still writing. I've okay. just come to the conclusion I don't care enough about this to keep on reading it. It just hasn't caught my attention enough for me to carry on with it.
Is it the stories or is it the characters?
I think it's mostly the characters. I think that I like my, you know, it's not martial artists just running around punching each other, you know. I think I need something a little more super about my superhero books. Mm-hmm. So that I'm averse to. I mean, it's well written, but it just doesn't. I find it hard to put my finger on why it just doesn't grab me, you know. But this is part two of two nights in Bangkok, which is essentially parts 5 and 6 of the storyline in which the Black Canaries and the birds are targeted by the mysterious White Canary. And this follows. This is after Huntress and Lady Blackhawk have followed Black Canary to Japan. No, not Japan, Bangkok. After she was taken away by the White Canary at the end of the previous issue, and she has become a White Canary herself. They find she has fallen in with the White Canary's organization, and we learn this issue. It's a bit of a mystery at the end of the last issue. We find out this issue. It's because the White Canary has her adopted daughter Sin and will kill her if she doesn't fight Lady Shiva to the death. And Huntress decides to step. Yeah. Huntress decides to step in her place and fight Lady Shiva, and that's what happens. Basically, there's a supporting character there's a supporting character who basically appears out of nowhere and goes from threat against their lives to trusted ally with no real justification. Two artists work their way through this rather unimpressively. It's very perfunctory. What the hell, you know, I feel that I might even have hung on to this a little longer if Ed Benes had continued to draw it, because I like Ed Benes. Yeah. And the fact that he only managed 2 and a bit issues is really, really insulting to on every
creative level. That's disappointing.
Yeah, it's like when you advertise a creative team, actually, you know, follow it through.
You know, whenever they do a new creative team on any book that I'm picking up, I expect at least, in my opinion, like 8 issues maybe.
I'd give them 6 for a graphic novel.
Yeah.
I would say 6 for a graphic novel, but if I didn't even get that out of them.
My thing about it, and I hate it because I do like Gail Simone, and I really...
I do, too. That's
I like
thing.
Her work on Secret 6.
I like it, yeah.
But I don't... This arc... was just, I don't know, something weird. And for one thing, I never really appreciate Deus Ex Machina. And that the ending of this is so that.
Yeah.
You know, the henchman just comes in and is like, I know where your daughter is. Everything's safe now. You two don't have to fight to the death. You know, it
right,
just doesn't...
It's over.
Yeah. It doesn't... It makes... The only thing I'll say is that at least by ending, it draws all of those plot points that have been building up together, and it ends, which makes it a beautiful jumping-off point.
Yeah, which I shouldn't praise something in a comic, but honestly, it has just, on an artistic level, it's failed to engage me through the capriciousness of the creator, of the artist. And I think we said it before last time, but it just like as a series, it seems to have really failed to reintroduce its characters to any new readers that have come. I know that I had triple the number of orders for Birds of Prey with this new series, The Brightest Day tie-in, than I did for Brightest Day before it was for Birds of Prey before it was canceled. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel that the comic successfully reintroduced us to the characters.
No,
When it relaunched, and it's just failed to hold my attention.
Yep.
I was kind of hoping the book would be really awesome, because it just seemed everything I hear about like the old book from like other comic friends is that it's like one of their favorite books, and they really enjoyed it. And then when it was canceled, they were you know, really disappointed, and then it come back and it's like, yay, it's back. But you guys kind of make it sound like it's not that good.
I think if we would have,
I imagine Birds of Prey fans are loving it.
Right, and that's what I've heard, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think if I would have read the other and then read this, I would have been more interested. But, and I think your point is spot on, McFeely. It did not give a good jumping on point for new readers.
And that seemed so misjudged, because the story was literally, was actually about the team coming back together. And yet, it didn't exploit that concept to reintroduce us to the characters. But yeah, that's Birds of Prey. You won't find us talking about it anymore on this show, folks.
Don't think so. Nope, I gotta take it off my whole list.
Yeah. But talking of new female books, She-Hulk's this week.
Yay, She-Hulk!
Hooray, She-Hulk!
Is it any good?
Well, let's talk about it. solicited, rather sadly, as an ongoing, and presented on the cover with just a number one in the corner box as an ongoing, but evident on the invoice lists and the new solicitations as having been cut back to a four-issue miniseries.
Ah, boo.
Obviously, the initial orders on it were not impressive. And that's disappointing, because I like She-Hulk, and I actually wasn't going to pick this up, but I read the preview in the Sneak Peeks book that Marvel brought out 2 weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks ago? Or was it a week ago? Whatever week it was. Last week. And I really liked the look of the preview. I liked the look of the art. It seemed quite fun, and I decided to give it a go. And looks nice and is a bit of fun. Sums it up pretty nicely.
You know what it reminds me of, the art? Mike Waringo.
There's a little bit of Mike Waringo in there. There's a little bit of Paco Medina as well.
And I loved, you know, Waringo's art. That's what kind of drew me to it, and I thought, wow, it kind of looks a little bit like it.
There is definitely something there. Yeah, definitely something Waringo-ish in there. And a little bit of Paco Medina, who does Deadpool. And, that Latin American style is the style I'll describe it as, because it's that sort of slightly exaggerated cartoonish style that you see from Paco Medina and Humberto Ramos and stuff like that. The story, it follows on from Fall of the Hulks, essentially, where She-Hulk, the She-Hulks, that's Jen Walters, and the Savage She-Hulk, Lyra, who's the daughter of the Hulk and Tundra from the future, are in
Best
the are in the process of hunting down supervillains, the intelligentsia, the super geniuses who were the cause of all the problems in Fall of the Hulks. The issue kicks off with them bringing in the Trapster, and then they're sent off after the Wizard. And then there's this weird bit in the middle where they have to get on with their lives outside of all of this as well. And Jen is just relaxing in the swank pad that Bruce has arranged for them. And Lyra is sent off to go through cliche high school.
Okay.
You know, the mean girls sure don't like the new one. And boy, that teen heartthrob that the head mean girl sure likes has become friendly with her. And I don't get that part of the story. I mean, I guess the twist on it is the fact that she barely knows how to operate amongst human beings. She's not just the new girl. But the idea of Jane pushing her into this sits ill with a character who has, for so much of her history, been so at home in her green skin. The idea of her pushing anybody to do something normal as a normal person sits a little bit ill, and it just seems like a weird side thing, because then they go off to fight the Wizard, and that's a lot of fun. They fight
the Wizard's always fun.
Who doesn't love the Wizard, you know? Because he's basically gone off and he's gone to Monte Carlo, and he's filled a ship with attractive young women and has just gone off to sea in it.
Awesome.
But they stow away, and then they crash the boat and bring him in. And they're just getting started. So it's really very hard to know where this is going. Oh, it also has some backup material in the form of handbook entries for the two She-Hulks.
You know, this kind of sounds like Peter David's run, because when Peter David took over She-Hulk, She-Hulk sort of became a bounty hunter.
Well, it's, you know? she's not she's doing it for Bruce. She's working outside the law with Bruce, but yeah, I mean, I guess the closest, yeah, then there's a comparison there in the fact that she's out hunting down villains.
Yeah.
But it seems like a kind of a loose collection. I mean, there's two plots here going on, and one of them seems like a weird sort of unnecessary addition to the story. It's not bad. I mean, I like Lyra well enough. She has pretty good creator pedigree. She's created by Fred Van Lent, you know. And I do like the art. I like the art a lot.
And, so does it seem like funny? Because, like, you know, the thing that draws me to She-Hulk is that she's a character that can be an interesting superhero, but what's really awesome is that she's just kind of, you know, just funny. She just funny, stupid stuff in her issues. Like the whole stuff with Dan Slott's stuff was she was always just doing stupid stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's funny, but it's not funny enough. It is not Dan Slott She-Hulk funny. It is funny in a different way. It is not Dan Slott She-Hulk. I mean, the thing that convinced me to get it, though, was the funniness of it. Basically, you got the introductory captions on the first couple pages. The Trapster is breaking the bank in a casino. Peter Petruski, the Trapster. Active weapons. Gravity inhibitor, which he uses to fix a roulette game. Yeah. Magnetic accelerator, which he uses to pull all the slot machines towards She-Hulk to try and crush her. Hover boots, which he tries to get away on. Glue guns. Jen Walters, She-Hulk. Active weapon, fist.
Awesome. So, you know, see, that is sort of a Dan Slotin type of thing. Yeah.
It's about the only time that a joke of that level takes place in the issue, though. So, I mean, I don't know either of these creators. This is written by, one of the creators' names, written by Harrison Wilcox, which sounds like a pseudonym, and penciled by Ryan Stegman, neither of whom I know, but Stegman, I think, could certainly go some places.
Yeah, I like the art from what I've seen of it. I mean, I think that the art kind of drew me in.
Cartoonish edge. Yeah. I mean, She-Hulk hasn't had She-Hulk. I always think She-Hulk needs cartoon. I really liked Juan Bobilio's work on She-Hulk with Dan Slott because it was a really European cartoonish style. I know it really wasn't for everybody, but I really enjoyed it. But then I can't even remember who took it on afterwards, and I just.
Yeah,
it's work on it.
The later art I didn't enjoy as much as the earlier stuff on it.
I mean, it's a fairly, I don't like saying it, you know, but one of the, I shouldn't because John Byrne recognized it when he did the story. And one of the things about She-Hulk is that she's sexy.
Yeah.
And you need an artist who can put that across properly, but not to the point that it's like weird or distracting, you know, that annoys me. But so that's why I thought Juan Bobilio did a really good job, because he was able to produce like a preposterously curvy She-Hulk, but have it not be like a weird TNA kind of curvy, but a really cartoonish muscular sort of curvature that I just thought really, really worked for the character. And then I forget who the guy was who came on later, partway into the second She-Hulk series, but she couldn't have looked uglier, frankly, under his pencil. And then I forget who drew Peter David's run as well, but then that was just some really straightforward superhero artwork. So this is some of the nicest artwork I've seen on a She-Hulk series since Juan Bobilio. That's definitely what I will say for it. It hasn't set my world on fire story wise, but it doesn't feel like the story has really got started yet either. So I'll give it. Certainly if it's been crushed down into a mini, I'm gonna read the rest of it. But you know,
I think I'll try it because I want to give it a shot because I want another She-Hulk monthly because I like She-Hulk and I would like to see her come back.
Based on the strength of the first issue alone, though, it feels like a mini.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's not a great start. It's a bit of me to say, but it kind of feels like a mini. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully it'll get better. Otherwise, I don't have too much to say about my other two things from this week, which were Avengers: The Children's Crusade for the first one, which continues to be a rather talkative, but this is the third issue of this series, bi-monthly, continues to be a very, very talky book. where everybody sits around and argues facetiously about what they are or aren't going to do. Gorgeous to look at, though. I mean, Jim Chung is doing the work of his career on this book. It's gorgeous, but it is a bunch of gorgeous people standing around tables.
Yeah. Yeah. Star Trek?
But, well, it takes a swing, an upswing at the end when they finally find the Scarlet Witch, who, it turns out after last issue, has been held prisoner by Doctor Doom all this time.
Ooh.
Yes, she. Okay. Because who else would have the technological and mystical resources to completely remove every trace of her presence?
This is a good point.
Yes, but she doesn't remember herself. She has the amnesia, and you know, I mean, all the truly, truly. I mean, it does perfectly fine character work, but it is a large collection of people standing around rocky landscapes, tables, and Avengers Tower, arguing with each other about how they're going to proceed in capturing the Scarlet Witch. It is gorgeous to look at, and the last page appearance by Doom himself is like, but I really need this book to actually get moving forward out of the cat. Because, I mean, literally everybody spent the last issue standing around arguing as well. And a lot of the first issue, too. And the first issue was very set-up-y. These two issues, the last two, and the second issue, it brought Quicksilver into it, so it did move things forward. But this issue really is down to the point now where everybody's just saying, you know, just displaying their personalities. I need this book to move faster. At a bi-monthly 8-issue miniseries, I need more happening in it. I'm not dropping it or anything, because it's too nice looking, and I like the characters, and it's doing good character work. But I need more. Ultimate Thor was also my other thing for this week. Which is still just more great stuff from Jonathan Hickman, continuing the way the story was set up in the last issue, intercutting between the present day, well, not quite the present day, Thor, before he joined the Ultimates while he was still part of the European Super Soldier Program, the ancient days of Asgard, in which we see him in a pit fight with Baldur and Loki and the Warriors 3, yay, Volstagg, and... Yeah, the late 1930s, in which Baron Zemo and his son use runestones to summon frost giants to join the Nazi army and invade Asgard.
Oh my god. Frost giants and Nazis. Why am I not reading the book?
Frost giants in Nazi uniforms.
No.
Giant Nazi uniforms?
Yep. They must have had them specially made.
Nice. Wow.
But they're also doing some interest. I mean, the stuff that's catching my interest the most is the stuff that's happening in the present day, because you've got Donald Blake here as well. The presence or meaningful is unclear, but Donald Blake has done like CT scans of Thor, and he can tell that he's not making this shit up. He is remembering it. Of course, we all knew that, but. And the Asgardian scenes in between the last issue and this one, Thor has been given Mjolnir, and it is leading to the tale of Loki's betrayal. And then the cliffhanger of the issue, Zemo takes his frost giants and they head off to Asgard, beating Heimdall down on the way. But the real kicker of the issue is one I'm absolutely not blowing. It's when Zemo takes the hood off at the end of the issue.
Mm.
What is under there is not what you think.
Huh.
It's Howard the Duck.
Yes.
Ultimate Howard the Duck.
Oh my god.
I don't know how you could think Howard the Duck Ultimate. And before we move off me, I am going to carry on the trend I started last week, and I'm going to keep doing this now if I accomplish it in between times. I'm going to talk about a graphic novel I read this week.
Okay.
Just finished this one this morning. Took me a while because it's a big one. It is The Vision and the Scarlet Witch, A Year in the Life, which collects the 12-issue miniseries from the mid-1980s after The Vision and the Scarlet Witch got married and The Vision gained a more human personality. And the Scarlet Witch became pregnant. This is the whole... It's set in real time. Each issue is set a month apart. And it tracks the course of the Scarlet Witch's pregnancy, culminating in the birth of the guys who will be Wiccan and Speed of the Young Avengers through.
Is that a new trade or did it just come out?
Been on my stack since about the middle of summer.
Okay, so I guess they planned that. They put it out to coincide with.
I think the trade has been specifically collected because of the Young Avengers connection.
Okay.
But you know, you've got guest appearances by Doctor Strange, Luke Cage, Spider-Man. It also contains issue number 2 of West Coast Avengers because the series kicked off with a crossover between the two. So this is 13 issues in here for $35 was the price tag on this one. It is a sizable, but with 2 double size issues as well.
Hmm.
And the central thrust of it charts the Scarlet Witch's pregnancy as she tries to come to terms with her father a bit more, and that's Magneto. And I don't want to spoil too much of. Well, I can't really spoil it. I mean, it's old.
It's like what 80s? Story, it's very old.
But that's the thing. It was particularly interesting to me as someone who came into comics after the Vision and the Witch had already split. I've only ever known about their relationship retroactively as a thing of the past that mm-hmm. everybody was always tiptoeing around the messiness of their relationship. I think the only thing I've actually read back issue wise of their relationship was the Celestial Madonna storyline, which culminated with the Vision proposing to her, and then Immortus officiated their marriage, I believe. So this is like one of the first things that I've read of them as a couple, and it, you know, the thing I'll simply say about this is written by Steve Englehart with art by Richard Howell, and this is so much better than I was expecting it to be. And I mean, that makes it sound like I was going in not expecting much, but you know, it's a mid-1980s Avengers comic, and I've never been a huge Steve Englehart fan, so I wasn't expecting my world to be set on fire. I was expecting to be entertained, but it is a hell of a lot better than I thought it was going to be. It is really, really good. It's got a bunch of twists and turns in it. Like, I mean, each issue stands alone fairly well because they're each set a month apart. You know, one issue, summer solstice or something. Some mystic shit that happens in the spring, whatever. And they're fighting Salem 7 and Agatha Harkness is in it. And then Magneto comes for Thanksgiving dinner and the Toad reoccurs in a couple of issues, you know. And then they team up with Luke Cage on Martin Luther King Day.
is it Luke Cage or is it Power Man?
It's Luke Cage, Power Man. It is Power Man.
It is Power Man at that point. Okay. Yeah.
Because it draws on a lot of cool little threads from throughout as well. I mean, they team up with Luke Cage because in a previous issue of Luke Cage of Power Man and Iron Fist, the Scarlet Witch had appeared and these like mystical idols had appeared, and she had taken custody of the idols, which appear briefly early in the series when they're unpacking in the new house that they move into. And then the demon who owns the idols comes looking for them, and then that's why Luke Cage is in it, for instance. But there's some real twists in there. Like, we meet their neighbors, who are a pair of magicians called Glamour and Illusion, who turn out to be jewel thieves like 3/4 of the way through the book, and I never saw it coming. It was like, awesome! And, you know, this is also the story of how Quicksilver and Crystal are recurring supporting characters. And I always knew their marriage broke down, but I never knew how. So I turn to the last page of the 7th issue and find it's because Crystal's off shacking up with one of the Scarlet Witch and the Vision's neighbors. I was like, you slag! I didn't know it was coming.
Cool.
There it is. And I've never, as I say, somebody who came in when their relationship was past tense. Their relationship is written very truly and genuinely. You know, the Vision is not just is not a weird robot in this. This was after he had a control crystal removed from his head that gave him a more human personality.
You know, if he was a weird robot, that would also kind of be interesting too, just to see how that relationship would work.
It would, and I mean, but they'd already gone through a large portion. Well, they'd already gone through a pretty sizable portion of their relationship with that. The main cut and thrust of this, certainly of the beginning of this, is that the Vision is not that now, and they're truly coming to love each other as people for perhaps the first time. You know, their love is growing even stronger, and I absolutely adore the fact that throughout this, they don't know Wanda's having twins. And the final issue is called Double-Sized Climax, in which she pops out another one. But it was full of like nice twists and turns in there, like the stuff with their neighbors or the stuff with Crystal and the way there's a lot of dealing in with relationships and things in this as well that is very well done. And it's like, you know, you've got the Vision and the Scarlet Witch, you've got Crystal, got Glamour and Illusion there, a couple of Crystal and Quicksilver are in there as well, and the Grim Reaper and Necra play a large part in the first and final story arcs. And it's a funny coincidence as well, because we had just had the Grim Reaper in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes this week, and I was watching it with my brother, and he asked me, why does he look all desiccated? Because he does. He looks like all corpse-like in the cartoon. And yeah. I knew that's because they were drawing on a period of Avengers history where the Grim Reaper was dead for a while. But the only reason I knew that the Grim Reaper had spent any period of time dead was because that was the central plot of the first story that Kurt Busiek used him for back in when Busiek and Perez started the Avengers, which was when I really started reading the Avengers. But I never knew how it had happened to him. And hey, 2 days later, I'm reading this book, and here's the story of how it happened.
Cool.
So that was a fun coincidence as well. And it's got some great backup material. It's got unused covers and some Fred Hembeck art that was used, a comic strip that was used in lieu of a letters page. It's got the article promoting the series from Marvel Age magazine and a one-page like original comic strip advert for the series from Marvel Age, as well as some nice bonus material. And it's just a very sizable, very strong... You know, sometimes when I'm reading old comics, like, I like old comics, you know, but sometimes comics from this era in particular, they can kind of drag, you know, you're reading them and they're just very, very dense and they just keep going and characters manage to deliver 7 speech bubbles worth of text while they're falling, you know, but these were really tightly written and they were still very dense without dragging on. I mean, I breezed through a lot of these issues. I'd be like, oh snap, this issue's over already when I read this. I was looking forward to it when I got it, but it was a lot better. It really exceeded my expectations. So I definitely recommend going and taking a look at this. Vision and the Scarlet Witch, A Year in the Life.
Cool. Yeah, I'd like to read through that. I've never read that, and just like you... You know, their relationship is something that existed prior to when I was starting in the comics also. Mm-hmm. So it'd be cool just to see you find the same stuff that you found when you were reading it.
Well, I'm going to try and talk about a graphic novel every week if I have one read between then and now. I got a stack of them like 12 high here next to me.
Yeah.
So
oh, Lord.
If I
I've
get
got
one read.
You're not hurting for material then.
Yeah. I've been trying to get to reading Elektra Assassin for like 3 years. I have a trade paperback of that, and I've never read it.
Well, I have got The Marvelous Land of Oz, which I'm really looking forward to, Grant Morrison's Marvel Boy, Captain America Two Americas, Tomb of Dracula Volume 2, Classic G.I. Joe Volume 9, G.I. Joe Special Missions Volume 2, Captain America The Bloodstone Hunt just came out this week, Gruenwald's Spidey, looking forward to it. Batman and Son, The Black Glove, and Batman R.I.P., and Essential Fantastic Four, Volume 8. I don't know which of those I'm reading next, but it probably needs to be either Cap, Tomb of Dracula, or one of the G.I. Joes, since the next volume of each of those series is all out next month. Yeah.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
Right, so, J.D.
Okay, I guess that leaves it to me then. I'll try and move through these a little bit quickly. Green Lantern, Emerald Warriors continues to baffle me as to why I'm reading this. I guess that's a good question. I don't know. It's like it's still building towards something, but I'm not sure. Basically, what I got out of this issue is that the people of Doxum are either power-hungry megalomaniacs or sheep. One or the other. And that Sodom Yat is basically setting up a religion to himself. And that's about it. So, I think I'll be dropping that soon. Anyway, on to the things.
So this isn't like the greatest Green Lantern book they're building up to be. Like, you know, Guy Gardner and Kilowog, you know, in a buddy cop book.
It is sort of like that. I mean, there is those hints of Guy Gardner, and you have, you know, again, you're moving through this, you know, storyline where he's slowly being taken over by the Rage, you know, and of course the other Red Lantern that's sort of traveling with them is trying to draw that out of him, but it's just damn slow. I mean, for as much as should be happening, not a lot is, and it's still this mystery of what's going on in the unknown sector, but I just don't really care. I'm still not understanding so much why I should care. There's this whole thing where there's supposed power drain on Green Lantern rings, but that is only of importance in this series. There hasn't been a point made of that yet in Green Lantern, and that's not been a point in Green Lantern Corps either. So it doesn't feel like it's as important as this series is trying to make it out to be. So I don't know. I'm just... And it's another one of those that's the $4 run, too. So it's kind of like, I don't know why I'm spending $4 on it.
If you said three, I'd understand, but $4.
Yeah.
It's coming down.
It is coming back down, but I don't know. I guess maybe I'll hang on and hope something happens. It is supposed to be Under the Brightest Day banner, but, you know, I don't feel it, so we'll see. On to Booster Gold. I have to say, I opened it up, and an amazing thing happened.
You liked it?
It didn't suddenly turn to crap.
Awesome!
Yeah, I gotta say. Yeah,
they pulled a switcheroo.
Is this the next issue after that issue that was the god awful one?
Yes. Yeah. After this awful run, basically Booster pulled a full like Deus Ex moment, but I was fully happy with them doing that because he basically just popped in, went and grabbed the book, gave it back to Blue Beetle, and said, "See you next time," and they were done. It was.
It makes me wonder if that's how this was originally supposed to go.
Because
the last issue was really setting it up, like that was what the next issue was going to be, you know, going in and getting it. But it's like, it feels like they listened last issue.
Yeah.
They listened to us last time.
Yeah, like two issues ago, they listened to us. Because this does sort of feel like a filler issue.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I think the reason I say that is because that... It was just Veterans Day. This came out Veterans Day week. It's got a patriotic feel to it as far as, like, that World War II, you know.
Could be right.
And it's a completely self-contained story. You get to the end, mm-hmm. and, you know, it doesn't really – I mean, it sort of leads into getting the time machine thing, but it's not, you know. It wasn't a bad issue. It was certainly more into getting back into the kind of Booster that I like. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like I was in the middle of a previous series. So, it was
Yet
fun.
Yet still, the character that they meet in this issue, General Glory, is still a character who was on the JLI when these guys wrote the book.
Yes, so that's what I mean.
They're almost shaking off that, they haven't managed it fully. By and large, it is a much better issue. And it definitely got some laughs out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feature Booster using crafty time travel logic, which the last issue managed as well.
Yes.
But it's still my last Booster.
Yeah. Still dropping it?
Yeah. It hasn't turned around enough. While the story manages to be better, the undercurrent of the book that has been annoying me about it remains. Mm-hmm. And I have no reason now at this point, 6 issues in, to think that that's going to go away.
Yeah, and I understand that. I'm not, you know, I don't blame you. I'm going to stay because I love Booster.
Yeah, I can follow
Thicker
follow
Thin. Thicker Thin, I love Booster. So, but I do feel better about where we're going. And absolutely, the way time travel works in this, I mean, his logic in here is, it even befuddles Skeets at one point, and that's when I know it's good. when he's like, look, now we know where she is, we'll just go back 6 days in time, pick her up from there, and then leave. And then it's just brilliant. There's just...
So when you read the book, does Skeets sound like Billy West in your head? Because he does if I read the book.
No.
But... I got nothing, sir.
I don't know. When I think of Skeets now, I think of Skeets the way he sounded in the graphic audio version of 52.
Oh, I hadn't listened to it.
Okay. It's this little it's very electronic, you know, very heavily electronic process voice. A little bit higher pitched, not quite as deadpan as Billy West played him.
Actually, I think he sounds like in my head, probably if I had to say, it's more like Jarvis from the Iron Man series. Yeah. I don't know why.
It's more leisurely look around. Good thinking, sir.
Yeah, it's definitely British.
Sir,
but...
I don't know why everyone says you're so stupid.
I don't know why, but he is British in my head, so go for it.
Oh, I've never thought of Skeets as British.
I don't know why I do that, but... You know.
Speaking of graphic audio, actually, you know, I saw in the newest previews is Graphic Audio 52. No, Graphic Audio Final Crisis.
Ooh.
So it's finally coming out very soon. If it hasn't already been released by them through their website already, it's just in the newest previews for release in the next month or two. So I will definitely be checking that bad boy out.
So are you hoping that it will make sense now?
Well, I follow Jerry Conway on Twitter, and just this week he tweeted he really likes the DC novels written by Greg Cox because it made Final Crisis comprehensible. Jerry Conway speaks only truth.
Okay.
I also heard him ragging on how much Kirsten Dunst sucked as Mary Jane one time as well.
Ooh.
And it was like, Jerry Conway knows what I want.
Alright.
Oh man. Okay, so on to something I actually want to talk about in depth. Justice League Generation Lost.
I actually went and read this after you asked me if I'd read it on Twitter this week, because I figured something big must have happened in it if you were asking me.
Now, do you hate me for making you do that? Or
No. I was like, holy crap, that's a lot of explosions that are certainly happening there.
So, beginning of the story is a little bit of an intro for, maybe, I guess you'd say it's sort of, not backstory, but it's a historic moment for Magog. And we open up with Magog laying out a 55-gallon drum full of whoop-ass on Captain Atom with his now-augmented lance via Maxwell Lord. And, of course, everybody's a little freaked out that Atom's getting his ass whooped, since that really shouldn't be happening. And he's trying to get Booster and Blue Beetle to run, of which I think even Beetle is saying... They're trying to tell Magog, look, we want to surrender, and he's not having any of that. And Blue Beetle's like, look, we got to go, and Booster's not wanting to. And, yeah, lots of things start exploding and blowing up. And apparently whatever was augmented on his lance is emitting a very weird kind of radiation, which is the same kind that had launched Captain Atom into the future a few issues back. So, after a brief scuffle, Atom finally manages to get the upper hand, and just when Captain Atom talks Magog down and gets him to realize he's being controlled by Maxwell Lord, and now he can help them, because he now also remembers who Maxwell is, guess who shows up?
That was awesome. Hold up.
Maxwell shows back up. And mind controls Magog to blow his own head off.
What?
Yes.
He won't be missed.
No one cares. He was only relevant in Kingdom Come.
The fact that nobody cares is how you were able to do this.
Yes. But yes, a huge half-page head exploding with red stuff.
Sort of surprised it's not the new Blue Beetle.
Would
that piss people off, you think?
Oh, yeah.
It pissed DC off.
Yeah, I think so. But this is big for two reasons. One, semi-big, because now Magog is dead, which he was never even relevant in this universe, correct? And he was only sort of relevant, or partially relevant because of...
They tried to give him an ongoing series. Like,
what? Yeah, my God, no. Not Magog.
Yeah.
And that but, still lasted a year before DC killed it. Like.
Yeah.
I mean, when Geoff Johns did the thing he did with that character, I guess it was okay. But
it was all right.
Yeah, when he was done with that character, God, I didn't care. Yeah. I mean, kill him off.
I mean, when Thy Kingdom Come was running in Justice Society was the best thing coming out from DC.
Yeah.
It was always top of my stack. I looked forward to it every time it came out. It was awesome.
But as soon as he left, that character...
As soon as he left.
He needs to be there no more.
So... Now, here's the deal, though. If we remember when all of the returned people had their charges, Maximus was to stop the war before it starts. And I'm wondering, you know, just as a pre-guess, is this supposed to be maybe a tie-in that saying that eventually the events of Kingdom Come would happen and he's stopping it now? I don't know. Or maybe this is talking about something else.
I think they're trying to say that, you know, something like that.
The big news is, hey, Max accomplished his mission. Therefore, life returned.
Damn, bitch!
Yes.
And then what happened after?
Well, of course, the crowds all start freaking out and yelling at Captain Atom, which it takes him a minute to be able to hear anything and figure out what's going on. And they're all yelling at him that he's a murderer. Why? Because by everyone else's accounts, thanks to Maxwell Lord, they saw Captain Atom blowing Magog's head off.
Oh! Uh-oh.
Yeah. So then, is it Max? Max picks up the lance and or throws it at someone, I think. And anyway, big freaking explosion that Captain Atom tries to contain, but there's still a big hole in the ground, and he is launched again through time. Maybe. Or maybe he's dead.
Well,
we don't know.
That's what they, they seem to be implying.
Yeah. Wow.
That's been happening to Captain Atom a lot lately.
Yeah, flying through time. Well, that was happening all the way back in 52 as well.
He's been doing a lot of quantum leaping.
Yes.
Okay.
Hoping that the next leap would be his leap.
Don't get a leap.
Thank you, sir. That's what I was waiting for.
He's hoping to leap into his own ongoing.
Yeah. Does Captain Atom even have an ongoing? Seriously, I don't know.
No,
they did that Wildstorm miniseries, Captain Atom Armageddon, was it called?
Yeah, I remember that.
He got shot into the Wildstorm universe after Superman, Batman crashing into that meteor.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a good book, huh?
Eventful shit right there.
Yeah. I mean, and I think this issue is fairly well drawn as well.
I didn't see it through it, but I like the art on it. And this raises the question now of what happens in this book next.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the original question was, how are you going to draw out the fact that nobody remembers Max Lord for this length of time? And then that question was answered about the halfway point of where we are now by going, because we're going to do this shit instead. And then it's like, holy crap, you did that shit. Magog has no head now. So
yeah.
Where are you going next? Like,
yeah, I mean, and that's why I'm saying I like this series. The little bits are adding up. I mean, it's going really well. More people should be reading this regularly.
I think you are correct, sir.
Thank you.
Definitely the one that has fallen to the wayside in the face of Brightest Day, which I think was inevitable, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it is good.
Yeah, it is good. So if you haven't read it, you should go back, pick up some issues.
If you were unsure about how this was going to roll... Like, in the face of how they were going to do the idea across 26 issues. You know, well, they're doing it by doing a lot of different stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a lot of characters to work with, and there's a lot of elements going on. So, I mean, you have...
As I say, I imagine there are still probably a bunch of guys who they're really pissed off about the retconning of Ice's origins. And
oh, who cares?
Fans who... His fist getting
she has ice powers. The only thing that I would care about is if her name was Ice and now she can like make fire statues or something.
Fire or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who cares? So,
anyway.
There are people out there who probably care. Just as I'm sure there are people out there who are really angry that Magog is dead.
Yeah, but who cares about them? I mean, I didn't know much about Magog, and I went and read up on him, and he's a freaking parody joke anyway. So
yeah, the idea of Magog was that he was Mark Waid's incarnation of the violent 90s.
He is everything that they was wrong, disliked comic and
the
felt
time. Yeah.
Yeah, felt was wrong from Marvel and from Image at the time. So, and if you look at the design of that character, I mean, that just comes screaming out at it.
Big metal arm, one glowing eye.
Yeah. Cable.
He has a staff that shoots lasers.
Yeah. I mean.
Hello, Cable.
Yeah. So, I don't. It's not so much that I care the character is dead. I'm just surprised that they did that in that way. And I think did it fairly well. So
yeah, I'm sort of surprised he wouldn't die in one of those two JSA books, because wasn't he still in the JSA?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think he was supposed to be a good guy. But that's where I say again, I think that the entire plot line here was to prevent Kingdom Come from happening in the primary DC universe. I mean, but
or
I don't know. Or something
unlikely.
Like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's so, the implication. No, by the way.
Yeah. Stop the war before it starts. Okay, so let's...
Speaking of a lot of funky time travel...
Let's get this wrapped up and talk about Return of Bruce Wayne 6. I know I talked to Brian earlier in the week, and he was telling me how much he loved this.
He loved it?
He thought it was just great. He was just oozing praise all over it.
So did he love the headache that this book will give you when you read it?
Actually, Brian,
I had a headache after reading it.
I think Brian hated this, but anyway. wow. I don't know.
Okay, McFeely, did you read this comic?
I made a specific point of reading this comic.
Okay, you read this, so can you explain this comic to me? Because I feel that I need some help here.
I can't explain this comic to you.
I feel like I'm missing an issue, even though I've bought every issue that Grant Morrison has written.
Well, there's,
of everything.
There's still two issues of Time Masters that haven't come out that tie into this, correct?
That's not going to help, is it?
I don't know.
The
previous
four
didn't.
I don't have the issue in front of me. But basically... at the end of the last issue, Bruce stole Carter Nichols' time machine when he escaped the ritual that Thomas Wayne, or what appeared to be Thomas Wayne, was trying to carry out on it, trying to summon Barbatos, and he escaped into the timeline with it. And the Nichols engine, as the caretakers at the Vanishing Point explain it, it has brought him to Vanishing Point in the future, where he is placed inside of the shell of one of these caretakers.
Archivists.
In order to heal him and heal his memory, because he needs his memory back to complete the plan that he's put in motion. He keeps wiping his memory to try and keep the hyper adapter, which is the creature Darkseid released from the Ancestor box, which was only shown in the two issues of Batman.
Wait. I need a breather for a minute.
Well,
okay, go on.
The hyper adapter was released from the Ancestor box by Darkseid after he shot Batman with the Omega Sanction in Final Crisis. And that was only shown in the two-part story that ran from Batman 701 to 702, which was the two issues that Grant Morrison wrote to bridge the gap between Return of Bruce Wayne and Final Crisis. And RIP as well, you know, that little filler bit in there.
Yeah.
And we know we have gathered at this point that Bruce is the hyper adapter has been following Bruce throughout time. It is this hyper fauna. It is this tentacled thing that attacked him in Pilgrim times. It has been following him throughout time, prompting each of his jumps throughout time so that he gathers up more and more Omega energy. Darkseid had gambled that Bruce Wayne, Batman, he didn't intend to kill Batman. He intended Batman to do the one thing that Batman does best, to survive. And every time he survives and every time he makes another jump, he gathers up more Omega energy, which he will release whenever he arrives in the present day, and it will just, destroy time. That has been Darkseid. It is like the Superman said back in like issue 2. He's turned Batman into a weapon of a weapon made up out of time itself. And Batman, we jump back, we lead back then into issue 2 of Return of Bruce Wayne, where we see Batman has bonded with one of these archivists, and after the events of issue 2, jumps into the present day in the here and now, where it turns out that the hyper adapter actually infected the archivist's systems and has taken over Batman's body. And so the Justice League help bait it out of him, and then they have to... We get a little trippy vision as Batman lies on the brink of death as they like medically stop his heart to release the Omega energy from his body, and then he's sent off to go and star in. They get the hyper adapter out of his body, trap it in the Titan Rip Hunter's time sphere, and send it back in time, where it. The issue seems to show it appearing in caveman times.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Did Bruce fight a giant bat in the first issue of?
No, but remember there was a bat carcass, wasn't there? I thought there was like
mayhap. But the implication is that we know from Batman and Robin last week that post this the hyper adapter then goes and makes contact with Thomas Wayne and essentially possesses him, and he becomes Dr. Hurt and lives down through the time. He's basically the newest incarnation of the hyper adapter bedeviling Batman throughout the centuries. And something else very interesting that I learned between last week and this week is that the whole thing from last week's Batman and Robin, you remember the sacrifice in the temple and underground with the men trying to summon Barbatos.
Yeah.
That was all in a Peter Milligan story called Dark City, Dark Night. Morrison didn't come up with that. He took that from somewhere else. This is just part of the tapestry.
So maybe that's where I've seen something like that from, because I know I'd seen that particular scene in some comic before. I just couldn't remember what it was.
That was in this thing where there was no mention of Dr. Hurt in it or Thomas Wayne, but in that story they just said that the sacrifice was left trapped down underground, but so was Hurt as well. So that is this issue. I have explained this issue.
no, that's right. I don't mean to say that. It's just like, okay, so wait a minute. There's a line in here that I was interested in, and I talked to Kilby about it, and he thinks I'm insane, which is probably true. when Bruce is lying on the floor, bleeding and everything, and he's starting to sort of, like, come back to his senses, but not, he says the line, Darkseid trying to incarnate in Hurt in the Doctor.
Yeah.
Is he talking about the hyper adapter, or is he talking about Darkseid himself?
Well, I think he basically is. I think basically it's that Hurt, like, whenever the issue came out, like, I heard a lot of people saying that, like, the hyper adapter was just some sort of incarnation or avatar of Darkseid. But then, basically, the way Morrison writes Gods and New Gods, as he said in this one, is that they are just ideas and concepts. They use, like, concept weapons and idea machines.
Like the bullet or something. Magic bullet. Yeah.
That flies through time. And basically the hyper adapter, as Batman says in this issue, is an unstoppable death idea. So I'm not entirely sure about that particular sentence. I mean, I don't think, I don't know if like Dr. Hurt would have eventually turned into Darkseid through the hyper adapter or not. I'm not clear about that.
Or could. I mean, they haven't brought Darkseid back yet, correct?
No, not yet. No. He is still... gods are.
And the other reason I say that is because there are a couple of references again when Darkseid talks about, you know, himself and these recurred lines as far as he is the whole and the in things. Hurt said that. He said something about
that.
Yes,
he has been claiming himself to be the whole in things since Batman RIP. And of course the central thrust of Final Crisis is that Darkseid's fall after his death has left a hole in reality through that everything is caving in on, and Darkseid, it is the hole shaped like God, as Darkseid describes it in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's definitely there's a theme, there's something thematic running through there, definitely.
So I'm not crazy.
No, you ain't crazy, fool.
Thank you. See, Brian, I'm not crazy.
I gotta say, last week, you heard me list them off when I was listing off my stack, but reading Batman and Robin last week and this issue this week just really made me see how much of a, like, I mean, there were times when I was in, Final Crisis annoyed me because a large part of Final Crisis isn't the annoyance, was that I was expected to have read Superman Beyond, or whatever it was called, because, you know, that's what everything hinged on at the very end. But this issue just really opened my eyes and mind up to the fact that everything Morrison has done is a tapestry. These are not isolated series that work on their own. This is something Morrison has been doing across four or five different series and minis that is all one story, and I have started to buy his running graphic novel now. This week I got Batman and Son, The Black Glove, and Batman R.I.P.
I know, I want to go back now and read the stuff that I've missed, because now, and this is, now that I understand that there's this much interplay, this much connection, I like it. I like it a lot.
It has really opened my, I can't believe it, but I'm contemplating actually purchasing the Final Crisis paperback to go along with this set of paperbacks I'm going to be picking up. And I own Final Crisis, but I'd get all the extra issues. I would just offload my issues of Final Crisis on eBay or something. But I mean, the funny thing is that in all of that, there's not that much of it. There's Batman and Son, Black Glove, R.I.P., Final Crisis, three volumes of Batman and Robin, the one other volume of Batman, which collects the 700th issue, and then the two-part story I was talking about, and then Return of Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, seven, less than a dozen books. 10 books, I think.
Yeah. That's
all together. Yeah.
I'll say one more thing, and I don't know how much more we want to add to this, but once I got to the end and was reading, you know, Bruce's little, like, memoir bits, now I understand why he's doing Batman Inc. And I feel better now. Like, if I would have read this and then read Batman and Robin 13, I don't think I would have had that sort of that negative feeling in my gut about, you know, why is he doing this Batman Inc. thing? Because when he makes the note at the end about how he was never alone, they were always with him, and he's always had help.
The first truth of Batman.
Mm-hmm. That makes
something
me go,
he's sort of denied himself and is now he's been forcibly made to realize something he's never maybe realized himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's one of the things about, again, the reading these two issues in this particular order really opened up to me about Morrison's run is this won't work too well in a graphic novel, in a series of graphic novels. Yeah, you can read the first, you know, his Batman run and then Final Crisis and then his Batman and Robin run. But as you move in towards the end, you've got really like the stuff from the two-parter in Batman with the hyper adapter and the filler chapters and the Carter Nichols and the time machine and everything. That stuff and the final Batman and Robin arc and Return of Bruce Wayne are really, really meant to be read intermittently as they come out monthly and a little piece of the puzzle comes from somewhere else in a separate book. I mean, these won't unfold in front of you as you read the graphic novels of them.
Yeah,
I mean, the last issue, you really aren't supposed to know. I mean, you are not supposed to read this issue before last week's Batman and Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Batman comes back in this and then goes on to star in that issue, the way the story of Hurt and the Hyperadapter is played out, you are supposed to read the last issue first.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully if they would do a collection, they would do it that way, like for this, that it would include.
Oh no! Well, I mean, they'll just release this particular story arc of Batman and Robin.
So we need to make a reader's list. We need to say, okay, buy these collections and then read them in this order.
It needs the little bat symbol with the numbers on it. That's good.
There you go. There you go.
I mean, you can literally read like.
And see, on this one, they could, like, play around with the number, and they could put, like, this would have the last number. That it would also have a number underneath it, which would take place before Batman and Robin, you know, just to like kind of play with the reader.
In the graphic novel collection, like, there's a page between each issue that says, now go and read.
Yes.
There's other graphic, then come back to this book.
this.
Yeah, then
but literally, like, you can read about 7 of these books in succession, but then it's just the last volume of Batman and Robin, the Return of Bruce Wayne, and this other collection. It's called Time and the Batman, is the name of the collection of the other Batman issues. Does that start have to have the interplay where you just they have to be bitty?
Yeah,
I might buy this in a trade. I might get Return of Bruce Wayne, and I might get some of those others because I would like to go back and reread all this stuff, and finding those issues now, I got issues all over the place, is going to be difficult.
I think the key thing about following Batman through all of this is basically just ignore anything Grant Morrison didn't write.
Yeah. Yeah, because it probably...
You don't need to bother with Battle for the Coil. You don't need to bother with The Road Home. I don't really think you need... I haven't got it. I don't think you need to bother with The Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul either.
Probably don't need to bother with...
Morrison only reads two chapters in it.
Vanishing Point.
Definitely don't need to bother with that.
None of the things that are going on there seem to be tying into here. So.
Just, if you want to read Morrison, like as imposing as all of this stuff, and every time they've... And all of the Nightwing and Robin and all those other tie-ins that they did to Batman R.I.P., just read the Morrison stuff. It's not as imposing as it looks.
Yeah.
It is a tapestry of stuff, but reading these issues just in general has made me appreciate the way the story is told a lot more than I did before, and it has prompted me to go back and finally. Mind you, I've got paperbacks for the first, paperbacks up to Final Crisis, but it's still hardcovers after that. The paperback of the first volume of Batman and Robin isn't out until April.
Yeah.
So hardcovers all the way after that.
Awesome. So we liked it. That's good. We're going to read more. That's even better for the people that we buy comics from. Because
this is not to say, mind you, that it is not fucking trippy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, Batman comes back from the future and he's a hairy cyborg. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. Well, it's not quite. Okay. Well, he
looks like a hairy cyborg is what he looks like.
Sort of.
Yeah. It's still not Final Crisis.
No.
God, no.
Which apparently I'm going to end up reading anyway, so.
Yeah, I think I'm going to find myself there again very soon.
But
then I just told you, the books I'm getting through at the minute are ones that have been on the stack since the middle of June, so we'll see where we go after that.
Yeah, when you get to those, so. Okay. That's it, I think.
Yes, we still didn't manage to make that any shorter, did
we? Apparently, this show is going to be 2 hours long.
Well, if we hadn't had any news this week like we haven't the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It was a busy week for comics as well.
Yeah, and there was a lot of good stuff, so we wanted to talk about that. But I don't know. That may just be the plight of this show. We may just be forcing Mephili to go to bed at midnight.
I don't know what we're going to have to talk about. There's not going to be any return of Bruce Wayne to end the show anymore. I guess it'll be Batman Inc. now.
Well, Brightest Day will probably start picking up pretty soon. So, but who knows? Anyway, let's get the heck out of here. So, again, if you want to listen, and you're going to find all our website and stuff, I will mention real quick because it's not going to be in the end part. We do have a direct link to the show now. It's fanboyversus.com, and that's all spelled out, no hyphens or anything. Fanboyversus.com.
And you know what? As a moment of relevance, you know what came out this week that we should just draw attention to because of that? DC finally, after like 20 years, or maybe even 30 years, I don't know what it is at this point, finally brought Superman versus Muhammad Ali back into print. And that's what our banner is. That's our Fanboy versus banner. That has just come back into print for the first time ever.
Yeah. They also got that really awesome statue. I would love to own.
Yeah.
We are so going to get sued over it. But, yes, it is our banner for the moment. We may be working on something else. And I will mention the other thing. There is a contest going on. Over at Radio Free Cybertron, which I would assume if you listen to this, you probably listen to that, but we may be working on getting more people in, so you might not know. But anyway, the prize for that, or one of the prizes, is a Fanboy versus Clock.
Yeah, you want it.
Which you can buy, too. So if you want one, you can go buy it. It's at our Cafe Press.
It's a cool-looking clock.
Yeah, it is a very nice-looking clock. I definitely want one. So if you like the show and you want a clock with our logo, you can get one. And there's no markup on those. We don't make any money on that, so don't think it's like a ploy to make money. That's just something we do because people like it. So check out the contest. I think it's tfradio.net/contests, but if not, you can just go to the TF Radio primary site, and there is a link for that as well. So anyway, there you go. That's the show. Please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010 Radio Free Cybertron.